The Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
Good evening and welcome to the first live in the studio edition of the Blackshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio for 2016. We're back. Hi, hey, everyone.
Hiya.
In the studio with me tonight, I have Matt Boothman, who's going to be reviewing a film.
Hello.
And also, Helen Johnson.
Hello.
Yay, we're all back together. This is fantastic. So this week on the show, we are going to be bringing you episode 3 of Great Expectations. If you have been listening, then we've been playing this fantastic adaptation of Great Expectations that we've produced and created, and it's lovely to listen to. So that's coming up at the end of the show. But the first thing that we are going to do, as always, is this.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
Matt, what are we talking about this week?
We're going to talk about Creed.
Something that I hadn't actually heard of as a film until you sent me a message about it yesterday.
Which is strange, because I think it's getting quite heavy promotion, and it is the new movie in quite a big franchise, albeit one that hasn't had an installment in a little while.
Mm-hmm.
It is the latest in the Rocky movies series.
Yes.
I have not seen any of the other Rocky movies, so
I can put my hand up and say I am in the same boat.
No, neither have I.
Yeah.
Good.
So the first thing I can say is you don't have to have seen them. You don't have to have seen any of the other movies for this one to be good. I still enjoyed it, even though I don't have any of the context other than the stuff sort of everybody knows, like that music that he has during training montages. and I have a vague memory of people doing impressions of Sylvester Stallone going, Adrian!
Yeah.
And he mentions somebody called Adrian in it. So you don't have to have seen the other Rocky
movies. So lots of throwbacks, pretty much.
There's a couple of throwbacks, and I feel like maybe, you know, there are some bits that maybe don't carry as much emotional heft if you don't know who it is that he's actually talking about, who this Adrian is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really about him. Stallone is the supporting player. The main character is Michael B. Jordan as sometimes known as Don Johnson. His sort of real, full, true name is Adonis Creed. He is the illegitimate son of Apollo Creed, somebody that Rocky fought in the boxing ring in one of the previous movies, who died before Don ever knew him. Don grew up in care until Apollo Creed's wife, so not Don's mum, but his dad's wife,
sure,
finds him in care and brings him up. So he has this sort of privileged upbringing of... So he starts off in care, and then he gets a sort of a nice upbringing with good schooling and lots of money and everything. You know, lives in a mansion because she still has all of the money that Apollo Creed, the greatest boxer ever, earned before he was killed in the ring,
mm-hmm,
or died in the ring, rather I should say. And so a lot of the Don decides that he quits his job in a bank or somewhere anonymous and decides he's going to be a boxer like his real father, and the whole movie becomes about it's about that name change and whether he's ever going to take on the Creed mantle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of about what it is that's stopping him taking it on. It seems at first like it's because he doesn't want to sort of ride on his famous dad's coattails, and he wants to make a name for himself on his own without people assuming things because of all that. But then it seems that maybe there's also an element of fear to it, and fear that he won't live up to the legend if he does take that name on. What if he takes on that name and then loses?
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to be sort of disgracing his father's legacy and that sort of stuff? So he seeks out Rocky Balboa, the main character of the previous films, played by Sylvester Stallone. Me trying to say his name sounds like him saying all his lines. slightly slurry,
that's
like he's got a mouthful of marbles.
It must be really difficult for him to, like, I mean, we struggle as normal people who speak normally with his name. Can you imagine how hard it would have been growing up as him? Like, just being able to not be able to say his name.
I don't know whether he's one of those actors that uses a stage name or not. I don't know whether it's his...
Oh, interesting.
It's his real name.
Let's look that up.
Yep.
I'll look that up. I'm interested in that.
So anyway... Don seeks out Rocky to train him to be a better boxer. And it's Rocky says to him quite early on, and sort of keeps repeating throughout the movie, that the greatest opponent in the ring is yourself, not the other guy. So and there's a weird link to The Martian, which we talked about last year, they don't seem like movies with much in common. But we talked about The Martian as a movie without a villain. Mm-hmm. And in a similar way in Creed, that mantra keeps going of your opponent in the ring is really yourself. The other person in the ring is just in your way, and you have to sort of get through him to kind of... It's yourself that's standing in your way. So in the same way, there is a sort of an opponent who mm-hmm. he is building up to defeating. And he's a British baddie for good measure, but an atypical one, because he's not the well-spoken British baddie that Hollywood loves. He's a Liverpudlian and a bruiser, obviously being a boxer. That guy is not. He might be the baddie, and he says some horrible things so that you'll feel good when he goes down in the ring, mm-hmm. but he's not really the villain of the piece. It's much more about Michael B. Jordan's character defeating his own hang-ups and becoming sort of the person that he
wants to be.
Yeah, a person that he's proud to be, mm-hmm. and that he feels like he's sort of a whole person, and not, you know, that he deserves the name, but that equally he's not defined by only being...
Right. Does he get that balance?
Yeah, by the end I think he does. Yeah.
Okay, that's good. I'm happy for him.
Yeah. So it's directed by Ryan Coogler, who I don't think I've seen any of his movies before, but watching some of the fights, they're super tense. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of sort of long camera shots, so without cuts, but the camera still gets really right in between the opponents. In sort of these sort of quite languid moves that almost reminded me of Birdman, which was a movie that tried to seem like the whole thing was shot in one go.
I saw Birdman on Friday.
Ooh, what do you think?
I loved Birdman.
Yeah. So the camera work reminded me a bit of that in the fights.
Ah.
And I felt like Ryan Coogler's also directing one of the upcoming Marvel superhero movies, The Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested to see how that works out, because I was watching these boxing matches thinking there are a lot of action movie directors who could learn a thing or two about how to shoot a fight that is tense and brutal.
Oh, that's interesting.
From this, you know, not too much cutting, so you can always keep in your head where the players are and what they're up to, and that kind of thing.
I think that's
where
something
the next
hook
is coming from.
A lot of the super hero films really fall down with is just that extensive editing that just makes you feel like you don't really know what's going on, because it's just you know, it's done to confuse you. I'm relatively confused a lot of the time when I'm watching a superhero film, because I'm like, oh, he's on the wall, oh, he's on the ground now, oh, I don't know what's happening.
I wonder if it's because a lot of the success in the fighting in superhero films relies on special effects, because they're superheroes, and in boxing it's just from the actual fighting. So to connect those two things, what does Black Panther do? Like, what's their USP?
I think he's sort of generally strong and fast, and also a bit of a genius.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
All the things, basically.
Yeah, all the things.
That sounds
so
great.
Like, he doesn't shoot energy or anything.
Right.
So I don't think it'll be very special effects heavy.
Cool. So that, you know, maybe that'll be a superhero film that you like.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Well, fingers crossed. We'll probably review it on here, so you know.
And to take a slight tangent on that subject of editing, talking about Mad Max Fury Road, which we talked about last year.
Yes.
That's up for a fair few Oscars, one of which specifically, sort of significantly, is for the editing, which Margaret Sixel did.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody on the internet, I forget who now, did a sort of demonstration or an experiment to show sort of this is the effect of good, like, Oscar-worthy editing. They took several different action movies, Mad Max Fury Road being one, and sped them all up 5 times. And Mad Max is the only one that you can still tell what's going on,
up
5 times, because it doesn't have all those really fast, frenetic cuts that the other action movies do.
That's so interesting. On Mad Max, I don't want to detract too much from Creed, which is the film we're actually talking about currently. I saw Mad Max on your recommendation, because Matt last year, I think I asked you at the very, very end of last year what your favourite film was, and Mad Max was pretty much up there. Yeah, mine was The Martian. I think you said Mad Max. I watched it with that in mind, and it was so good. Oh my God.
I'm glad you liked it.
I enjoyed it so much. Anyway, let's go back to Creed.
You said you watched the trailer
a
little while ago. I think that it's... I go on about this, but I think it's another of those movies that's been slightly badly marketed or misleadingly marketed. Like, you watch the trailers and it seems like it's a very, like, gritty, like, from the streets sort of 8 Mile kind of thing where everybody's kind of a bit miserable.
Yeah.
And it is a very intense movie, but it's not a very serious movie. Like, there's some humour in it. Michael B. Jordan and Sylvester Stallone have this sort of odd couple rapport where Don is this very driven guy who sort of, he says what he wants and then you have to go along with him. And Rocky's just this guy, he's kind of bumbling and is happy to just sort of go with the flow and like he's retired. So he doesn't have that drive anymore. And so a lot of it is about that interplay between the two of them.
Okay. I think that's interesting, like, coming from... I mean, I don't know a great deal about the whole Rocky franchise, but I don't think that he was bumbling when he was actually playing Rocky, like, fighting Rocky. So that's an interesting, like, shift for, like, as a character. I think the thing that I was most interested in watching the trailer, I said to Matt before, was the fact that I could actually legitimately understand Sylvester Stallone and what he was saying, which is new for me, because I've watched bits and pieces of Rocky's, not full films, but I've seen him acting in Rocky, and also like some of the other stuff that he's done recently, like The Expendables, where he is a bit of a joke because he can't talk very well. But I could understand him in Creed in the trailer that I watched, so you know, that makes me kind of want to go and see it, because you know, a lot of the time I think of him and I'm like, oh God, he's just a joke of an actor now. But it's nice that he's done something that's,
it's,
you know,
good.
It's
a good performance. It's a good movie. It was like the final match, I was actually properly on the edge of my seat, sort of stomach twisting with tension. It was I wasn't really expecting to get as into it as I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a sport movie. I'm not
boxing's
hugely into
a weird
sports.
One as well.
It is, yeah.
But boxing sort of divides people. There's people who are just like, I don't like boxing and I don't like films about boxing because I don't get it. And I think it's good to have those films about those sports that are a little bit harder to get into, that are actually good films.
And people ask him on a couple of occasions in the film, why is this what you've decided to do? Like, you could do anything, you have all the opportunities. I think the line is, why do you choose a fighter's life when you don't have to? And the movie's answer seems to be, it's if there's something that you can do that makes you feel alive, then you have to pursue that.
Yeah. That's a nice message.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good to go on. I think something else I wanted to talk about with you, particularly Matt, tonight, is Oscars. So at the very beginning of this review, I said that I didn't know anything about Creed. I haven't really seen that much about it. I haven't seen it on a bus. Like, I have seen, you know, Dad's Army
on
a bus
tube
yesterday. Obviously, The Revenant has been inundating everyone's lives just with its, you know, how much it's around. I think you said to me that Creed's kind of been a bit shunned.
Well, it hasn't got a Best Picture nomination. I think the only thing it's nominated for is Sly Stallone for Best Supporting Actor.
Right.
And in the context of all of... The internet is blowing up with hashtag Oscars so white, which...
Oh, it's so bad, isn't it?
This studio so white as well, so like we're not really in a position to discuss it, but it's the fact that this is a movie full of people of colour and the one white guy in it is the one that gets the Oscar nomination.
I would refer people to Will Smith on BBC Radio 2 on Friday morning. Chris Evans was asking him about Oscar So Wife. The reason why I say wife there is because Will Smith and his wife have done some of the best explanations of what's going on
really,
and why they're doing it.
Really good. I think it's a shame that we're having this conversation in 2016 again. The Revenant is one of the ones where it's just like, you know, it's an interesting film because it's not looking at just, well, it's really focused on white people at the end of the day. But, it really shows the First Nation people of America, I guess, really, really well. But then it's just about Leonardo DiCaprio just being really cold and having a really terrible time.
It's interesting that I could have been to see either of those. I could have been to see Creed. I could have been to see The Revenant. And both trailers looked, what I knew from each one, they both seemed like very sort of tough movies that would be like hard work to get through.
Yeah.
And I did not find that with Creed at all. Did you find that with The Revenant?
Oh my God. It was the most stressed I've ever been watching a film. Like, it was just, I mean, it's beautiful. And it's one of those, and this is my issue with the Oscars, and especially at this time of the year when these films are coming out. These films, especially The Revenant, aren't made for the wider population to go and see. They're made for the Oscars audience. They're made for the Academy to watch. They're not audience first. They're not doing what film is supposed to do, I don't think. And that annoys me, because I sit and I watch The Revenant and I'm like, wow, this is beautiful. This should get Best Picture. Why am I thinking about Best Picture? Why am I thinking about that when I'm watching a film that I've paid to go and see, and I should be, enjoying it, and I should be immersed? I wasn't immersed, because the whole time I was so stressed out and so anxious. It was just, it was not a very nice experience to watch this film. I mean, it's really, it's the story behind it, I think. And that's not what a film should be. That's not what people should be talking about. People should be talking about, oh my God, it was really hard to shoot.
Yeah.
Like, did you hear about how we wanted real lighting? Like, we should be talking about the story and about people's performances. But at the end of the day, with this film, we're talking about how difficult the shooting times were and how cold everyone was. And it's like, oh God, that's so boring.
Yeah, I kind of don't really care if Hollywood have to try really hard.
No.
Just try really hard.
Yeah, that's your job. Your job is to make a film, and it's not easy. Mm. Like, anyway, I really didn't appreciate it as a film. Everyone else that I've spoken to loved it. They thought it was fantastic. I just found it like a bit boring. Beautiful but boring. That's my review. I've really wanted to do this review because I knew that it was going to be really, I was just going to be like, I hated it.
Just to flip the script on you, you're not selling it. You're not making me want to go and see this film.
No, I don't even want to. I don't want to see it now again. Like, I just, yeah. I don't know. I think people will get different things out of it. But I didn't enjoy it myself. Review done. Usher out.
All right. Creed thumbs up, Revenant thumbs down.
Yeah, pretty much. My half-assed review of The Revenant. I'm so sorry, Matt, that I don't do your review times justice. So there's more stuff coming up in terms of films that are coming out this year. We were talking about Dad's Army. I think Helen was quite excited about Dad's Army when we were talking about it last night.
I'm excited about the cast.
The cast is amazing. It's incredible.
That's basically everything that I had to say about Dad's Army.
Yeah, the cast looks cool. Matt, do you know what you might be doing in a fortnight's time?
Well, I mean, all the other Oscar-nominated movies are starting to hit our cinemas now, so there's things like The Big Short and Room and Spotlight, which Spotlight is one that I've heard that it's Oscar-nominated, but that's the only thing I know about it.
Oh, see, I watched an interview with Mark Ruffalo about it. I mean, I love him so much.
I didn't know he was in it.
I think it's Mark Ruffalo.
You're right.
Yeah, he spoke about it really well, and it sounds really, really interesting.
I think so. I'm going to go and see that, I think.
Okay.
My parents went to see The Big Short and did not understand it.
Okay.
But then, if my mum didn't stay awake throughout the whole film, then that might be why. But she said she was confused from the beginning, which I think is worrying.
Ooh, that is concerning. The last film that happened to me in was Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, and I've never come out of a film just being like, I didn't understand any of that. It's not a good feeling. Like, as an intelligent person, as what I think I am, when you come out and you're like, I don't know what just happened.
Yeah, I think it was difficult with Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. I can't talk today. because it's that whole sort of Cold War spy thriller thing and everything's unsaid.
Yes,
and
it was very quiet. There was not much dialogue. Yeah.
It's not like Jason Bourne type of spy film.
No, you
definitely get hit around the head with a mallet.
So there's all the Oscar movies, or I might go for an Oscar antidote and see either Deadpool or Zoolander 2.
Okay.
Which are both out before
our
next
show.
Oh
my God, Zoolander 2.
Deadpool is on my list of things to look forward to for 2016, because It sits very comfortably in yours and my wheelhouse, and the marketing campaign has been amazing. And I would be interested to know whether Aisha actually enjoys it if she goes to see it.
Yeah,
I think the reverence of it will appeal to you.
Yeah, I think the last superhero thingy I saw was Age of Ultron, I think, and I was just like, ugh, boring, seen it before, like every other superhero film. But I think this one will be different.
Yeah, oh, it really will be. I think I'd like to think it would suit you.
Okay. Let's wait and see for that one. I'd like to also point out that we've done a really good job, which I'm happy about, of completely ignoring Star Wars on this show.
Yeah.
I don't think we spoke about it. Nope. I don't think, like, just because we sort of were off over Christmas.
It happened in the break.
Yeah. I fell asleep in the film and, like, in the cinema. That's all I'm going to say about it.
It's probably a good thing that we're not going into it, because I'd probably fill up the rest of the show.
Yeah. Okay. Let's leave it there. Good. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Matt. We were just talking about Creed. If you want to go and see Creed, Matt gave it a thumbs up.
Somewhere in there was Creed.
Yes. I think we're all very, very excited about being back live on the radio. And that's why we're a bit rambly tonight. So we apologize for that. We're going to try and not ramble in this segment. This is the first ever arts thing of 2016 on the Blackshaw Arts Hour. Helen is steering us forward into arts thing of the week, but it's sort of not so much about the week, it's more about arts thing of 2016.
Yeah, it's arts is what everything we're doing. Of the year.
Yeah, it's a big task that we've given you.
Cool.
But kick us off.
Right, do you want to hear about a theatre thing or a something else thing?
Theatre thing.
Okay, so I think the venues to watch this year in terms of theatre are the Young and Old Vic. So the Old Vic have got Ranulph Fiennes in Ibsen adaptation of The Master Builder. I know somebody who knows somebody who's seen part of the rehearsal, and apparently he's just incredible. And the Old Vic have done Ibsen really well before, so I think that will be a good one to watch, probably in your local cinema, because I don't fancy your chances of getting tickets. I say that in such a snobby way, like, I have tickets, but I don't think you can get them. I don't have tickets, just to clarify.
No one has tickets.
No. And with the Young Vic, they've got loads of exciting things. Just their homepage is amazing at the moment. Good work over there, Young Vic. And in particular, what I would pick out from there is Battlefield, which is Peter Brook. And the last time I saw Peter Brook at the Young Vic was a show called The Suit, and it was one of the best things I've ever seen. So I've got high hopes for Battlefield.
Mm-hmm.
So those are things that I am dead into in terms of main theatre, but going slightly more fringy, Duncan Gates has drawn my attention to an event called Hidden Vice at Theatre N16. That is on the 14th of February on Valentine's Day, so I thought I'd mention it today because it will nearly be done by the time we're next on. It seems to have lots of little shows in there. It's a bit of an extravaganza. One of them is by Duncan, but that's only part of the reason why I'm really excited about it, and I'm sure only part of the reason why he recommended it to me. That looks really exciting. There's a Facebook event for that Blackshaw, or yeah, we'll try and tweet a link to that, because I think that looks excellent. The other theatre thing that I think we should be keeping our eye on is happening right now, and it is the London Mime Festival.
Ooh, Mime Festival.
Ah, yeah. Came out of nowhere, didn't it?
Yeah.
So the reason why I mention that is because the New York Times did an article and where they said, they quoted somebody who I can't remember the name of, unfortunately, who said, if you want to see what's going to happen next with the best theatre companies, you need to keep an eye on Mime, in particular the London Mime Festival, because apparently a lot of practitioners that have gone into everything from Complicité, who are international starry film company, over to Warhorse in the West End, have worked on Mime and in the London Mime Festival. So that seems to be a good thing to check out, particularly if one of your resolutions is to try and be a bit more out there in what you try and go and see, which I know I should do, but I'm going to go and see Sheridan Smith in Funny Girl and have no regrets. Matthew, talk to me about the National Theatre, please, because you're the expert.
Well, when you say I'm the expert, you mean that I go and see at least sort of two or three things from each season. So I can tell you that the things I'm booked to see from the current national season are Iphigenia in Splott, by Gary Owen, which I'm seeing tomorrow.
Did my brain just melt there,
maybe,
or did you say some weird words? What was that title?
It's because it's a weird sort of mashup title. So it's Iphigenia, as in the Greek mythological Iphigenia, who's sacrificed to get the boat to Troy.
Right.
In Splot, which is a town.
Right. Okay.
A town today. So it's inspired by the Greek myth and set in Splot.
Oh, wow. I'd be really interested to know how that goes, because I end up seeing a lot of sort of classical Greek-related theatre because of my dear sister. Ah. And it's not usually in my wheelhouse, but that sounds like it might be, so you have to let us know.
Quite often in my wheelhouse, yeah. So we'll see how that goes. and that's new writings. That's by Sherman Cymru Theatre. And the other one that I'm booked for is Ma Rainey's Black Bottom in Littleton. It's an August Wilson classic, but it's not been on for quite some time.
Right.
It's all about the blues scene in Chicago in the 20s.
Oh, interesting. There's a new musical coming into the West End later in the year, June to September at the Wyndhams. It's called Lady Day, so it's a Billie Holiday.
Ooh.
So it's sort of a bit after that. So if you could do a theatrical double feature and the dates matched, that would be fascinating. But
Research and see if that's doable.
I've only ever managed to do it once, and it wasn't as beautiful a mix as that. Anything else that you haven't yet been able to book for at the National that sounds exciting, or
nothing that comes immediately to mind? No.
Okay.
That's the season for me at the moment.
I think the thing that I'm most interested in, what we were just talking about, is the Mime Festival, because mime kind of freaks me out slightly.
Okay.
Does mime freak anyone else out, or is that just me?
If they wear masks, then yes, but that's the masks, not the mime.
I think it's the white face thing.
Yeah.
Is that still a thing in mime?
Not always.
It's like, that's really traditional mime,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, okay.
So I think we should have a browse around the Mime Festival website and see if we
I'd
can
be
find some
very,
in the suits.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to see some, only because I only know, like, stereotype mime.
Yeah.
Of, like, someone pulling themselves along a piece of rope.
Well, write into us if you go and see anything at the Mime Festival, because we're definitely interested in hearing a bit more about that.
Yes,
I think
I am. In
cool.
Particular. So yeah, that's a good roundup. I like that. I enjoyed that.
Rattling through some stuff.
Yeah. Have you got anything else for us, or is that it?
I have got a bit more stuff. So in the cabaret realm, I would recommend that people go and see Lady Rizzo when she comes to the Soho Theatre in March. She's an incredible singer, and she's just so charismatic. It makes an amazing Saturday night to go and see her in the Soho Theatre and then pick up some more champagne afterwards. She demands champagne from her audience, I think. It's fabulous. I don't really know what to say. Just everybody leaves with an enormous crush on her, and that's good.
Yes.
So
yeah,
big love to Lady Rizzo. There's a lot of exciting sort of art type stuff around this year. In terms of mainstream, there's probably Wildlife Photographer of the Year. It's been the most, probably going to be the most popular thing. That's always really good. Have either of you ever been to Wildlife Photographer of the Year?
No.
Just the once, yeah.
Natural History Museum.
Yeah.
It's always a really special exhibition. They've got some incredible sort of really artistic pieces, and then they always make an effort to focus on sort of photojournalism elements in terms of nature and wildlife, and so some of that can be really shocking, but mm-hmm. really important to see. And it's a perfect demonstration of sort of the breadth of photography and how fascinating that can be.
And you can pop out of that exhibition and just go around the rest of the Natural History Museum, which is always amazing.
Yeah, yeah. You can if you like dust.
What do you mean?
It's really dusty.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's because it's old, Helen. That's why.
Okay.
That's the dust of history.
If you want to venture outside of London, heaven forbid, you might want to take yourself to Grace and Perry's A House for Essex, which you can rent out now as a holiday home, or I think you can just go and look at from the outside. It's sort of, I think, maybe jokingly referred to as Essex's Taj Mahal, because it's sort of done in memory of this amazing Sunday woman called Julie Cope. So that would be a nice day out for you, I think.
Heard about that? It's part of the same series as the weird boat on top of the South Bank Centre.
Yes.
which you can also rent out if you have lots of money and are willing to be on the waiting list for ages.
So I've just recommended some holidays there by accident. The other arty things that are... the thing that's most relevant probably to you as a somebody who knows about Blackshaw is probably the British Library's exhibit about Alice in Wonderland. Which for some reason they've got on this year. I don't know whether they started it last year.
Do you reckon
year?
They just like, yeah, they're a bit of a year late, aren't
I
they?
I think they've copied us.
Yeah, maybe. I'm pretty sure we started that whole thing, the 25th anniversary.
25th?
No, it wasn't the 25th.
150th, my darling.
Do you remember when we were actually talking about this and you thought it was something else that was really, really old, like 250 or something? Oh, I've just ruined it.
It's okay. Yeah, just numbers are not our strong point, but Alice in Wonderland is fascinating and can have, well, and has had so many different iterations. For example, Mervyn Peake did some fascinating illustrations of Alice in sort of this sort of coquettish, flirty manner, which is particularly interesting if you happen to have seen a particular BBC documentary about Lewis Carroll. I'm not going to say any more because of the time of day that we're on the radio. The last arty thing I would recommend, recommend, is a show called Champagne Life at the Saatchi Gallery, where for some reason Charles Saatchi has decided to showcase a load of new women artists, which if he's doing that as penance, good, but also looks like a genuinely good show. So
I do like what the Saatchi do. I mean, I don't like him, but I do enjoy going there and it's always very interesting. That does sound good.
That's my list.
Happening in 2016.
I filled up your diaries now, I hope. Yes. So
we'll be tweeting links and stuff to the most interesting ones.
Yeah, I might even have to do a blog. There's a lot there, isn't
there? I think
we
might do that. I think if you want to have a look at Blackshaw's blog, if you want to go to blackshawonline.com, then there's links to the blog, and we might do a roundup of arts things for 2016.
Yeah, I think so.
Just so that, you know, you don't have to keep re-listening to this segment, which could be a bit annoying and like writing dates down.
You can do that through the podcast if you would like.
Yeah, we are also a podcast, so if you want to search us on iTunes. That was a sweet like little link into there, Helen.
Yeah.
This is why I have Helen on the show. Thank you very much for the first arts thing of the week. Of the year,
yes,
which is what I'm going to call that. Right now we're going to play for you a piece of new writing which has been written by Kat Roberts, and it is called Age UK.
I'll just close this window. Don't want it getting cold.
This is nice, isn't it?
There's a bathroom over there, TV, magazines, if she likes to read.
Oh, yes, she does. You like to read, don't you, Mum? I've put all your books in this cupboard here. She always liked to read.
There's room for spare clothes over here. Laundry's collected weekly.
Okay.
Space for pictures over there, but nothing on the walls, please.
Sure.
They are quite particular about that, so absolutely nothing, including blue tack.
Okay.
I mean, really nothing.
Understood.
And no flowers.
No flowers?
No. Be like hospitals.
Right. Well, what about...
If I can just show you the bathroom.
Fake flowers.
I'm sorry?
Sure. I'm sorry. How about artificial flowers?
I will check for you. If I can just show you the bathroom. We do have a spare room with a bath in it.
She won't have a bath.
We do tend to find it's a bit difficult to get out of. There is an elevator with the amount of residents that's not always available. But as you can see, the shower here...
A shower is usually fine.
...does have the assisted seating plus the hand railing, as does the loo, to allow for a certain amount of independence.
To be honest...
There is always assistance available.
Mobility is pretty limited.
Absolutely.
That's why she's going to need help with most things.
Yes,
you know how this works.
Understood, yes. Now, I'll just show you how to do this in case you need to know. So this button here, if you just press it in, it moves the assist up and down. And this one here is left and right. There's the help cord there, and of course there's one by the bed, as well as one connected to the remote control. Shall we?
You keep dropping this. What? Do you want the toilet? What is it? Don't you want to be by the window? You want the window open? I think she's hot.
Oh! That's why you keep dropping your blanket, isn't it, Francesca?
Frank, I'll call her Frank. Everybody does.
Frank. Right, shall we get you settled in then?
Oh, I can do that.
Yes, yeah, sure. Yeah. And then, it's usually best. I don't sound rude, but it's usually easier for them if the loved ones leave as soon as possible.
Right. But I just haven't had a chance to put the towels in the bathroom.
Oh, we can do all that for you.
Right. Right.
We will take really good care of your mum.
Thanks. Okay, Mum. I'm going to go now. But I'll be back tomorrow to see you again. And this nice lady, she's going to really look after you. Call me if you need anything.
Nice photos, Frank. We'll have this looking homely in no time.
That one looks like a bit of a trout.
She's nice.
Dropping her mum off in an old people's home. She ain't that nice. Come here.
Oh. Stop it!
What? She doesn't care.
She's still got eyes.
Oh. All right though, darling. See anything you like? Anyone in there?
Jake, stop it.
Nah, the lights are on, but no one's home. You don't mind if I just face you this way for a minute, do you?
Jake!
What? Mama, break! Jeez, you're even watching. Come here. What are you doing later tonight?
Dunno.
Yeah, you do. Come over.
No.
Come over.
Won't she be there?
Nah, she's out.
Nah, you can't.
Sure.
Stop!
Come over then.
Oh, shit!
Leave it!
Don't be dark, come on!
Many opinions.
I suppose.
Terrific, Frank.
because I have many opinions. So we'll get along just fine. Put your shoes on.
Come on, Francesco, it's time for bed.
Yes, she's right.
We're going to get you ready for bed.
Come on.
Oh my god.
Come on. Ah! Come on.
Okay. All right,
Frank,
it's okay. I know it's quite
what
hard.
To a piece of new writing. It was written by Kat Roberts, directed by Stephen Bailey. Emily Ray played the part of Tara, Rosie Marsh played the part of Kate, Alex Kaniyama played the part of Jake, Priscilla Gray was Frank, and Catherine Lord was Alex. And we have some information for you, lovely listeners of Lecture Arts Hour. We're going to tell you right now that Sylvester Stallone is actually the name of Sylvester Stallone.
Sylvester Gardenzio Stallone.
There you go. It's not a stage name. So that's good. For anyone playing at home, that's what we were just talking about, because we were talking about Creed at the start of the show. Now, we're going to play the much-anticipated episode 3 of Great Expectations. We're 3 episodes in. I'm just going to give you a little bit of an intro if you can't remember what's been happening so far. Basically, Pip's encounter with the convicts is now long behind him. After a number of years visiting Miss Havisham and the beautiful young Estella at Satter's house, Pip is now teenage apprentice to Joe the blacksmith. On returning home after a visit to Miss Havisham, Pip has discovered that his sister has been struck on the head by an unknown assailant.
Great Expectations, Episode 3.
My sister lay very ill in bed. Her sight was disturbed, her hearing was greatly impaired, and her speech was unintelligible. A suitable attendant was wanting for her, and so Biddy became part of our establishment. Biddy was not beautiful. She was common, and could not be like Estella, but she was pleasant and wholesome and sweet-tempered. She had not been with us more than a year when I observed to myself that she had curiously thoughtful and attentive eyes, eyes that were very pretty and very good. One Sunday afternoon, Biddy and I went out together. It was summertime and lovely weather. When we came to the riverside and sat down on the bank, with the water rippling at our feet, I resolved that it was a good time for the admission of Biddy into my inner confidence.
Biddy? I want to be a gentleman.
Oh, I wouldn't if I was you. I don't think it would answer.
Biddy, I have particular reasons for wanting to be a gentleman.
You know best, Pip. But don't you think you're happier as you are?
Biddy, I'm not at all as happy as I am. I am disgusted with my calling and with my life. Don't be absurd.
Was I absurd? I'm sorry for that. I didn't mean to be. I only want you to do well and to be comfortable.
Well then, understand, I never shall or can be comfortable or anything but miserable, bare Biddy. Unless I can lead a very different sort of life from the life I lead now.
That's a pity.
If I could have settled down and been but half as fond of the forge as I was when I was little, I know it would have been much better for me. You and I and Joe would have wanted nothing then. And Joe and I would have perhaps gone partners when I was out of my time. And I might have even grown up to keep company with you, and we might have sat on this very bank on a fine Sunday. Quite different people. I should have been good enough for you, shouldn't I, Biddy?
Yes, I'm not over particular.
Instead of that, see how I'm going on. Dissatisfied and uncomfortable and... What would it signify to me, being coarse and common, if nobody had told me so?
That was neither a very true nor a very polite thing to say. Who said it?
The beautiful young lady at Miss Havisham's. And she's more beautiful than anybody ever was. And I admire her dreadfully, and I want to be a gentleman on her account.
Do you want to be a gentleman to spite her or to gain her over?
I don't know.
Because if it is to spite her, I should think, but you know best, that might be better and more independently done by caring nothing for her words. And if it is to gain her over, I should think, but you know best, she was not worth gaining over.
It may all be quite true, but I admire her dreadfully.
I am glad of one thing, and that is you have felt you could give me your confidence, Pip. Shall we walk a little further or go home?
Biddy, I shall always tell you everything.
Until you're a gentleman.
If I could only get myself to fall in love with you. You don't mind my speaking so openly to such an old acquaintance.
Oh dear, not at all. Don't mind me.
If only I could get myself to do it. That would be the thing for me.
But you never will.
It was in the fourth year of my apprenticeship, and it was a Saturday night. There was a group assembled round the fire at the Three Jolly Bargemen.
From information I have received, I have reason to believe there is a blacksmith among you by name Joseph or Joe Gargery. Which is the man?
Here is the man.
You have an apprentice, commonly known as Pip. Is he here?
I'm here.
The stranger did not recognise me, but I recognised him as the gentleman I had met on the stairs at Miss Havisham's.
I wish to have a private conference with you two. Perhaps we'd better go to your place of residence.
Our conference was held in the parlour, which was feebly lighted by one candle.
My name is Jaggers, and I am a lawyer in London. I have unusual business to transact with you, and I commence by explaining that it is not my originating. Now, Joseph Gargery, I am the bearer of an offer to relieve you of this young fellow, your apprentice. You would not object to cancel his indentures at his request and for his good. You would not want anything for doing so.
Lord forbid that I should want anything for not standing in Pip's way.
Lord forbidding is pious, but not to the purpose. The question is, would you want anything? Do you want anything?
The answer is no.
Very well. Now, I return to this young fellow, and the communication I have got to make is that he has great expectations. I am instructed to communicate to him that he will come into a handsome property. Further, that it is the desire of the present possessor of that property that he be immediately removed from his present sphere of life and be brought up as a gentleman. In a word, as a young fellow of great expectations. Now, Mr. Pip, I address the rest of what I have to say to you. You are to understand first that it is the request of the person from whom I take my instructions that you are to always bear the name of Pip. You will have no objection, I dare say, to your great expectations being encumbered with that easy condition. But if you have any objection, this is the time to mention it.
I have no objection.
I should think not. Now, you are to understand secondly, Mr. Pip, that the name of the person who is your liberal benefactor remains a profound secret. You are distinctly to understand that you are most positively prohibited from making any inquiry on this head, however distant in all the communications you may have with me. Again, not a very difficult condition with which to encumber such a rise in fortune, but if you have any objection to it, this is the time to mention it. Speak out.
I have no objection.
I should think not. Now, Mr. Pip, I have done with stipulations. There is already lodged in my hands a large sum of money, amply sufficient for your suitable education and maintenance. You will please consider me your guardian.
Oh, thank you, Mr.
I tell you at once, I am paid for my services or I shouldn't render them. When will you come to London?
I suppose I could come directly.
First, you should have some new clothes, and they should not be working clothes. Say, this day week? You'll want some money. Shall I leave you 20 guineas? Well, Joseph Gargery, you look dumbfounded.
Well, I am.
Well, Mr. Pip, I think the sooner you leave here, as you are to be a gentleman, the better.
No more low, wet grounds, no more dikes and sluices, no more grazing cattle. Farewell, monotonous acquaintances of my childhood. Henceforth, I was for London and greatness. Next morning, Joe brought out my indentures and we put them in the fire. I went to the tailors and the hatters and the bootmakers and the hosiers. I also went to the coach office and took my place for 7 o'clock on Saturday morning. So Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday passed, and on Friday morning, I went to pay my visit to Miss Havisham.
Well, Pip?
I start for London, Miss Havisham, tomorrow, and I thought you would kindly not mind my taking leave of you.
This is a gay figure, Pip.
I have come into such good fortune since I saw you last, Miss Havisham, and I am so grateful for it, Miss Havisham.
Aye. I have seen Mr. Jaggers. I have heard about it, Pip. So you go tomorrow?
Yes, Miss Havisham.
Well, you have a promising career before you. Be good. Deserve it. Abide by Mr. Jagger's instructions. Goodbye, Pip. You will always keep the name of Pip, you know.
When I was on the coach and it was clear of the town, I deliberated with an aching heart whether I would not get down when we changed horses and walk back and have another evening at home. We changed, and I'd still not made up my mind when we changed again and yet again, and it was now too far to go back, and I went on. And the mists had all solemnly risen now, and the world lay spread before me. We Britons had at that time particularly settled that it was treasonable to doubt our having and our being the best of everything. Otherwise, I think I might have had some faint doubts whether London was not rather ugly, crooked, narrow and dirty. Mr. Jaggers had duly sent me his address. It was Little Britain, just out of Smithfield.
Is Mr. Jaggers at home?
He is not. He is in court at present. Am I addressing Mr. Pip?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Jaggers left word, would you wait in his room? He couldn't say how long he might be, but it stands to reason, his time being valuable, that he won't be any longer than he can help.
Mr. Jaggers's room was a most dismal place. There were some odd objects about, such as two dreadful casts on a shelf, of faces peculiarly swollen and twitchy about the nose.
Pray, whose likenesses are these?
These are two celebrated ones, famous clients of ours that got us a world of credit. This chap murdered his master, and, considering he wasn't brought up to evidence, didn't plan it badly.
Is it like him?
Like him? It's himself, you know. The cast was made in Newgate, directly after he was taken down. You had a particular fancy for me, didn't you, old artful?
Ah, Mr. Pip, you are to go to Barnard's Inn to young Mr. Pocket's rooms, where a bed has been sent him for your accommodation. Here are the cards of certain tradesmen with whom you are to deal. You will find your credit good, Mr. Pip, but I shall by this means be able to check your bills and to pull you up if I find you outrunning the constable. Of course, you'll go wrong somehow, but that's no fault of mine. Wemmick will walk you round to Barnard's Inn. Good day, Mr. Pip.
Casting my eyes on Mr. Wemmick as we went along, I found him to be a dry man, rather short in stature, with a square wooden face, whose expression seemed to have been imperfectly chipped out with a dull-edged chisel.
So, you were never in London before?
No.
I was new here once.
Is it a very wicked place?
You may get cheated, robbed and murdered in London, but there are plenty of people anywhere who'll do that for you.
When he said we were at Barnard's Inn, my depression was not alleviated by the announcement. We entered into a melancholy little square that looked to me like a flat burying ground. I thought it had the most dismal trees in it, and the most dismal sparrows, and the most dismal houses that I have ever seen. While dry rot and wet rot and all the silent rots that rot in neglected roof and cellar rot of rat and mouse and bug and coaching stables near at hand, addressed themselves faintly to my sense of smell and moaned, "Try Barnard's mixture."
Ah, the retirement reminds you of the country, so it does me.
He led me into a corner and conducted me to a set of chambers on the top floor. Mr. Pocket, Jr. was painted on the door, and there was a label on the letterbox. Return shortly.
You don't want me anymore?
No, thank you.
If at any odd time when you have nothing better to do, you wouldn't mind coming over to see me at Woolworth, I could offer you a bed and I should consider it an honour.
I would be delighted.
Well, thank you. Have you been invited to dine with Mr. Jaggers yet?
Not yet.
When you go to dine with Mr. Jaggers, look at his housekeeper.
Shall I see something very uncommon?
Well, you'll see a wild beast tamed. It won't lower your opinion of Mr. Jaggers's powers. Keep your eye on it. Good day.
Mr. Pocket Jr.'s idea of shortly was not mine, for I had nearly maddened myself with looking out for half an hour before I heard footsteps on the stairs.
Mr. Pip?
Mr. Pocket?
Oh, dear me, I am extremely sorry. The fact is, I have been out on your account, not that that is any excuse, for I thought, coming from the country, you might like a little fruit, and I went to Covent Garden Market to get it good. Pray come in. I am rather bare here, but I hope you'll be able to make out tolerably well. This is our sitting room. This is my little bedroom, rather musty, but Barnard's is musty. And this is your bedroom. I trust it will answer the purpose.
As I stood opposite to Mr. Pocket, Jr., I saw the same starting appearance come into his own eyes that I knew to be in mine.
Lord bless me! You're the prowling boy!
And you are the pale young gentleman!
You've been listening to Great Expectations by Charles Dickens, adapted by Marcus Baisley, produced as a collaboration between Blackshaw Theatre and Cyphers. The narrator was played by Jeremy Drakes, Magwitch and Pumblechook by Dylan Lincoln, Compeyson, Porter and Galley by Marcus J. Baisley, Estella and Mrs. Joe by Victoria Hamblin, Pip by Rupert Sadler, Joe, Wemmick and Drummle by Christopher Anderton, Sergeant and Jaggers by Alexander Pankhurst, Miss Havisham by Jessica Bryan, Herbert Pocket by William Holyhead, and Biddy by Rosie Marsh. Sound recording and design by Andrew Crane. Produced by Helen Johnson and Aisha Chapman.
You have just been listening to episode 3 of Great Expectations. We have come to the end of another show. On this lovely Sunday evening, I'd like to thank Matt and Helen for accompanying me in the studio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be hearing Matt's review of something in 2 weeks' time.
Probably
when we
something
have...
zany.
Yes, probably Zoolander 2 or something equally as fun. We're back in 2 weeks' time, and coming up next on Wandsworth Radio is The Cheese Board. Bye.
Bye.